The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think that we need to rethink it and criminalize
to the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
We love it.
Hey, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the show. Tuesday, September 3rd, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. And unfortunately, we come to you with sad news of the passing of Jenny Kush, a longtime activist in the Colorado area, one of the Moms for Marijuana co-founders, very, very dear to many people in the movement. I think I had the chance to meet her maybe a couple of times, did not really know her as well as I wish I had, but so many people in our chat room know of her, and I encourage you all to check the scroll at the bottom of the screen on today's show. We've got a fund. Well, we don't have a fund, but I've made a link to a fund for Jenny Kush for her memorial fund, rad-r.us/JennyKush, if you'd like to donate. On today's show, a very dear friend of the show, in fact, the man who is responsible for creating this job that I now hold, Chris Goldstein from Philly Normal and Freedom is Green, will be with us today. He's been involved in the smoke-out prohibition activism that's going on there in Philly, where they're having regular protests with public smoke-ins to protest marijuana laws in Philly. Chris and his fellow activists now are facing court and possible jail and fines. So he'll be on at 5:30 to talk to us about what's going on in his case and what's going on with activism in Philly Normal. Also on today's show, a couple of exposés, got some new articles up at hightimes.com. We're going to go into them in a little depth today. In Behind the Headlines, we will talk about the DEA's partnership with AT&T, the communications giant, a program known as Hemisphere, and the news of this that broke through the New York Times and ABC News, getting a hold of a PowerPoint presentation, of all things, that detailed just how much spying is going on. If you thought that NSA spying that we talked about earlier was amazing, wait until you hear about Hemisphere. We'll talk about that in Behind the Headlines. Also, for the Radical Rant today, I'm going to take a look at the results of drug testing for welfare. You know how much I hate this demonization of the poor. We're going to show you the results of Oklahoma, Utah, and Florida that shows we are spending twice as much money to catch people and kick them off welfare than we would have spent to just give them the welfare in the first place. Plus, we've got your 420 radio news coming up right after this first break. And for our daily Toker Tunes today, Electric Tuesday, we got Bacon Dan bringing us some music from, let me see, the artist's name was Kim, where's her name there? Darn it. Kim Mitchell with Go For Soda. So we'll have that coming up in our 20 after break. All that on today's Russ Belville Show. Please stick around and thanks for supporting us at 420radio.org. Become a member today and help support listener-supported marijuana legalization public radio. We'll be back right after this break.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
Everywhere you go in Washington State, things are greener than ever. Why? Because last November, Washington voters made adult recreational use of cannabis legal, which is why the High Times U.S. Cannabis Cup is coming to Seattle once again to salute Washington's historic victory. If you love cannabis, then get yourself over to the High Times U.S. Cannabis Cup on September 7th and 8th as the marijuana community gathers in force to celebrate our newfound freedom. Meet the businesses of the emerging cannabis industry. Learn about cultivation, topical oils, concentrates, edibles, and more. Sample dabs, buds, and delectable morsels of cannabis cuisine. Then rock out on Saturday night at our Smokin' Hot concert featuring Slightly Stupid and Redman. And of course, on Sunday evening, we present the U.S. Cannabis Cups for the top indica, sativas, hybrids, edibles, and concentrates of the great state of Washington. Plus, we honor professional traveler and outspoken cannabis advocate Rick Steves with the High Times Lifetime Achievement Award. Come to Fremont Studios on September 7th and 8th in Seattle for a historic celebration. Go to MedCanCup.com for details. Be part of the growing cannabis community.
Is there anyone out there who still isn't clear about what doing drugs does? Okay, last time. This is your brain. This is drugs. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions?
This is your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, September 3rd, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Medical marijuana activist Jenny Kush killed by a drunk driver. This from theweedblog.com. On August 31st, longtime marijuana activist Jenny Kush was killed in a car accident involving a drunk driver. Her life was spent promoting awareness and spreading the truth about marijuana, a safer alternative to the legal drug that has stolen her life. Moms for Marijuana International, Jenny was a founding member of the group, which is now put together a memorial fund. You can visit it by typing in the address rad-r.us/Jenny Kush. She helped to start the first Moms for Marijuana Colorado chapter before she moved on to pursue activism through other local opportunities. She was a dedicated cannabis warrior, and her light will be missed in this life. Jenny leaves behind a grieving family who are stricken with the sudden loss of her in their life. To help and aid her soulmate, Jeremy, and her children through this difficult time, we are raising funds to send to them directly. Department of Justice actively considering how to allow banks to do business with dispensaries, from Huffington Post. The Department of Justice is actively considering how to regulate interactions between banks and marijuana shops that operate within state laws and don't violate other federal law enforcement priorities, Attorney General Eric Holder told the governors of Washington and Colorado. For now, financial institutions and other enterprises that do business with marijuana shops that are in compliance with state laws are unlikely to be prosecuted for money laundering or other federal crimes. During a briefing on the department's new policy Thursday, the officials would not rule out prosecution in any case, but the new approach is a reversal of a DEA policy that had warned banks not to work with marijuana businesses. The justice official, speaking on the condition of anonymity, said that the department recognized that forcing the establishments to operate on a cash basis put them at greater risk of robbery and violence. In some ways, banks may be in a better position after the announcement than shops in Washington and Colorado. Prosecutions of the local dispensaries are driven by prosecutors on the ground, while bank prosecutions would be run out of the Maine Department of Justice, which authored the memo and presumably would be more likely to abide by it. U.S. Forest Service, rimfire marijuana link, just rumors at this time, from CBS.com in Sacramento. As the rimfire burns to its third week, one official suspects the massive wildfire near Yosemite National Park was caused by an illegal marijuana grow. The rimfire has burned more than 235,000 acres, or more than 350 square miles. Twain Hart Fire Chief Todd McNeil's remarks ended up on YouTube, but flew under the radar for days. Quote, "It started down in the brush. We know it's human-caused. There's no lightning in the area," he said. "Highly suspect it might have been some grow marijuana grow type thing," end quote. The U.S. Forest Service calls the pot grow possibility nothing more than a rumor at this point. advocate for medical marijuana not eligible due to drug charges, from NBC Chicago. A seriously ill woman who lobbied to legalize medical marijuana in Illinois won't be eligible to get it herself because of a drug charge. Michelle DiGiacomo won't be able to get the medical marijuana under the new bill Governor Pat Quinn signed into law last month. She suffers from fibromyalgia, rheumatoid arthritis, and spinal stenosis, among other things, and had been using marijuana for pain relief. The 53-year-old Chicago woman was arrested in 2012 for having marijuana in her possession. She pleaded guilty to felony possession months before Quinn signed the bill into law. The drug charge disqualifies her from getting medical marijuana in Illinois. The Oregonian to legislature, refer marijuana legalization to the voters, from the Weed Blog. The Oregonian, the state's largest newspaper, called for legislators in Salem to work with New Approach Oregon's Anthony Johnson to craft a marijuana legalization measure for referral to the voters in 2014. This marks the second time the newspaper has chided lawmakers for failing to take the opportunity to shape legalization in Oregon. Johnson, a former chief petitioner for a previous dispensary initiative and recent lobbyist who fought for House Bill 3371, this session's attempt at exactly what the Oregonian proposes, is the head of New Approach Oregon, a fledgling lobbying group dedicated to passing marijuana legalization in the state of Oregon. According to the Oregonian, quote, "The legislature should work with Johnson. As long as Oregonians are going to vote on the issue, why not let them choose a legalization proposal that's withstood the rigors of the legislative process?" End quote. This has been your 420 Radio News for Tuesday, September 3rd, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the scenes at the startling new uncovered allegations of spying against American citizens with the DEA's Hemisphere program in concert with the massive corporation AT&T. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
Cannabinoids and health.
Cannabinoids.
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 Why am I having trouble saying that?
Cannabinoids.
Jeez.
Cannabinoids.
What a gift. Play more if you can. You're looking for the dope weed.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for us to go behind the headlines. And we also want to say hi to our friend Pony Boy in the chat room. That's a little bumper from Pony Boy that we play quite a bit here. But I wanted to talk to you about this breaking news that came out over the weekend. And it just kind of got buried over the Labor Day weekend. But this is pretty amazing. I've written it up for HighTimes.com in an article called "Big Brother Watching Even More Than We Thought." And if you'll remember, we previously reported to you about the spying that was revealed between the NSA and the DEA, where basically the NSA, that's your national security agency, and they're charged at the federal level with protecting us from international threats, namely terrorism, you know, other countries spying and a bunch of other stuff, but mostly terrorism. And we granted them all sorts of new powers to spy through the Patriot Act. And with the Patriot Act, they have been, in fact, most of your Patriot Act subpoenas and warrants and all these things have overwhelmingly gone toward drug cases. Very few of them actually went toward terrorism cases. And so we've kind of known about that. And recently it was revealed that the NSA and the DEA were involved in swapping information pretty regularly and covering it up through a process known as parallel construction. This is where they eliminate all trace. Think of it as, you know, money laundering for the evidence trail. Okay, they launder the evidence trail to make sure that they think that you think it was just the local cop who saw your burnout taillight instead of the DEA getting information from the NSA off of a wiretap that happened to, you know, specify that it was your car they should be looking for. So that was already the level of spying we knew about. And under these Patriot Act and the NSA and all of this, the NSA has some limits as to how much data it can gather, how it can gather it, and how long it can keep it. Namely, what they've been going after lately is what they call phone metadata. And I know this gets complex for people, so I just wanted to break this down. Metadata is not the actual content of the phone call. It's not listening to you and me talking to each other, but it's what time was the call, who placed the call, what routes did it go through, if it was a cell phone, what was the look, you know, what was the towers it went through, and so on. How long was the call? And we'd learned also that the NSA had been investigating three hops deep into this. Now, this is like that 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon game, where if you pick this actor and then he was in a movie with this actor who was in a movie with that actor who was in a movie with Kevin Bacon, that's like three steps, right? So the NSA had been investigating phone records three hops deep. That means if I called you, they would investigate you and then all the people you called and then all the people they called, right? And this would, you'd be rounding up millions of people's worth of information when you start to expand this in a tree of who's calling whom. And so this invites all sorts of Fourth Amendment prosecutorial problems, constitutional problems with our right to be free from unreasonable search and seizure. It's not reasonable to seize the records of a million people to go after one. Well, that was small potatoes, people. Check this out. This new Hemisphere program that we heard about, there is a PowerPoint presentation. And in my article on hightimes.com, you can click on a link that will take you to the actual presentation where it talks about how this program called Hemisphere works directly with AT&T, the global communications giant, and they have access to trillions of records, trillions of phone records, 4 billion call data records per day added to this database. And this program has records going back to 1987. So where the NSA is prohibited by the Patriot Act and other laws from keeping their records any longer than 5 years, AT&T's got it going back to my sophomore year in college, for God's sake. Back to 1987. On average, they're tracing 5 numbers a day. And their excuse for this is that, oh, well, in the age now of cell phones and these burner phones, we'll be tracking a drug dealer and then he'll get rid of his phone and get another phone. So we've got to find out all the people that he called. What numbers are they calling now so that we can round up what the new number is for the guy? Yada, yada, yada. There's always an excuse. And unlike the NSA, when they're collecting metadata at the National Security Agency, they don't have the location of the callers. In the case of AT&T, they do. So they're even getting more information out of AT&T than they've got in their own government databases. And furthermore, the AT&T information isn't just the people who are using AT&T phones or subscribed to AT&T. It's any call that's gone through the AT&T network. You could be a Verizon caller. You could be working on an old rotary phone. But if it went through some switch or some tower belonging to AT&T, that data is now available pretty much carte blanche to the DEA, which only has to issue an administrative subpoena. An administrative subpoena is just paperwork, folks. Does not require the sign off of a judge, does not require review by a jury or any sort of court. It's an administrative subpoena to get as much information as they want. But that's not even how far this goes. The federal government has been paying AT&T the equivalent of 4 people's full-time salaries to have AT&T employees embedded at the DEA offices in Atlanta, Houston, and Los Angeles. That's right. Federal government has paid AT&T salaries. That's basically AT&T is putting their own people to work alongside the DEA to streamline the process, they say, to make it simpler for the DEA to get the information they need. And yet, throughout this PowerPoint presentation, they indicate how Hemisphere can be walled off, how they can use parallel construction to hide its very existence, and that no one involved with it should ever mention it at all in any official briefings or documents. This needs to be reviewed by the courts. This needs to be reviewed by the Congress. It's not even a classified program, folks. There's nobody broke any laws leaking this. But they really wanted to keep it secret.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Ever wonder how often to change your bong water? The most effective method for baking pot brownies? The best destinations for a ganja getaway? How to hide herb in your car? Whether to grow your own? How precisely to legalize it? Or how something as wonderful as marijuana ever got to be illegal in the first place? Finally, you can find all these answers and much more in the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook, featuring 420 things to do when you're stoned. Since 1974, High Times magazine has covered marijuana in all its aspects and wonders, from cultivation to legalization to the herb's enduring and exalted place in popular culture. Packed with inside information, the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook wove all of this collected wisdom together into a single indispensable ganja guide, including an entertaining look at marijuana's history, profiles of herb-friendly travel destinations and festivals, favorite potluck recipes from the High Times staff, smoking skills, advocacy and activism, essential marijuana movies and songs, profiles of famous cannabis strains, comprehensive growing information, celebrity endorsements, and much more. This is truly, finally, the ultimate guide to green living.
Fun.
Oh, hello. I'm Big Daddy, and I want you to join me at the Funky Roller Ring. We're partying hard over here, baby. So stop on by. Check out the funky grooves and shake your booty, too.
Don't get in a too deep, brother. Don't get in a too heavy. Don't get so you can move a bottle with a heavy.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together. So let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes. The best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Electric Tuesday, featuring the latest in electronic dance music and other cutting-edge genres. You can get downloads and more information about all our daily Toker tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your daily Toker tune.
All right, folks, just want to remind everybody that the show today is dedicated to Jenny Kush, the memory of Jenny Kush. And if you can, make a donation to that address down at the bottom of the screen. It's rad-r.us/Jenny Kush, if you can. Understand if you can't. Everybody's got to do what they can here. We got to stick together in this cannabis community. I'm only here because a lot of people are backing me and a lot of people helped me and supported me when I needed the help. And we're trying to kick that forward, pay that forward to the other activists, the other people out there who are working so hard for the end of this cannabis prohibition. Also, normally Bacon Dan would be calling in right about now. I think he's got to work today, but he did send us some music. Before we get to that, I wanted to take a minute here to just reflect on that story that was in the news, because it went by pretty quick. But the Chicago woman, who's a medical marijuana advocate who testified at the Capitol, who was one of the primary lobbyists to get medical marijuana in Illinois, cannot get medical marijuana in Illinois because she was busted for using medical marijuana in Illinois before she helped legalize medical marijuana in Illinois. Does this make sense to anyone out there that because you were illegal last year, we're not going to let you be legal this year? Only people who never broke the law to use marijuana as medicine are eligible to be legal to not break the law to use marijuana as medicine. Once again, we see where this stupid idea of trying to separate the people who are sick enough to protect from the ones healthy enough to jail for marijuana gives us these absurd results, these absurd consequences, these unintended consequences. If it doesn't protect this woman, who is it supposed to protect? Anyway, let's get to our music for today. For Electric Tuesday, we've got some music from Kim Mitchell, uploaded by our friend Bacon Dan PDX. We'll hear more about it later, I'm sure. This is called Go for Soda.
Sergeant Craig Simpson.
There are other tests which officers can perform that may help them to make this determination. Tests such as one called lack of convergence, which looks to see whether or not a person is able to cross their eyes. Marijuana is a drug that prevents a person from being able to cross their eyes. Interestingly, it is the only drug category that doesn't allow a person to cross their eyes and also does not allow the person to exhibit a jerkiness of their eye. So it's a unique drug in that sense. That is the only one to provide that influence.
Are you or is someone you know a marijuana smoker? Have you or is someone in your family been arrested for a marijuana violation? You need to know the truth about pot. NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, is the most comprehensive source of information regarding marijuana and its effects on health as well as legal issues. NORML even offers a database of lawyers specializing in cannabis in your area. NORML, the nation's largest and most successful marijuana law reform organization, has spent decades gathering the knowledge and science on everything related to cannabis. Normal is the best resource to find out the truth about marijuana. Connect with a lawyer in your area or help find an end to prohibition. Information is available at normal.org. That's NORML.org. Or toll free at 888-67-NORMAL.
Activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belleville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Half past the hour, and that voice is going to sound familiar to you because joining us here by telephone from Philadelphia, we got Chris Goldstein from Freedom is Green and Philly Normal. Chris, how you doing?
Hey, Russ, how are you, man? It's great to hear you. And I was so funny. I'm sitting here with Scott Gasek from Boston, who's sitting here in the backyard with me. We're in South Philadelphia, and I heard that. And I haven't heard that in years. I was like, wow. I was like, that sounds familiar. I didn't even recognize my own voice for a minute there. That was really cool. Thank you, man.
You're welcome. And, yeah, we're still playing plenty of normal PSAs. There's a few of yours in there that float around in the randomizer, so it's always good to hear your voice. And since we've talked last, there's been some changes as far as your affiliations are with Philly Normal. Am I right?
Yeah. Actually, we did a sort of reorganization of the board, and the rest of the board was kind enough to invite me back. Some people are, you know, this is volunteer activism, and other people, you know, everybody has got a full-time job as well for the most part. So as people get busier with their work, you know, their activism kind of need people to fill in that space there. But some folks need to fall back a little bit, and we've got plenty to replace them here. Really good community. And I'm now the co-chair of Philly Normal with a great guy named Mike Whiter, who is also the co-founder of a group called Pennsylvania Veterans for Medical Marijuana. He's a Marine veteran of Kosovo and was also all around the world in his job. So, but he also lives with PTSD, and that's something that doesn't qualify in New Jersey. And, of course, we don't have a medical marijuana law yet in Pennsylvania. But that's why it's so important to be working with folks like Mike to advocate for this here right now.
All right, so Philly Normal up and running, and as I've always known it to be one of the top local normal organizations out there, and part of what you guys have been doing has been involved with a series of regular demonstrations, and we've covered them a couple of times here on the news. Tell folks about these demonstrations you've been doing and what kind of consequences you may be facing as a result.
Well, it certainly has been an interesting run, Russ. I mean, almost a year into this, you know, it sort of began, you know, a lot of people have gone out and smoked marijuana as a sort of civil disobedience action at this location. It's got a lot of special meaning right here in Philadelphia in front of Independence Hall, where the Liberty Bell is housed in a building across the street from the Constitution Center. I mean, there's the original Quaker meeting houses are there. This is just the bread and butter of American history and what this country is all about. And then, you know, it's also a place where traditionally Americans and people from all over the world have come to express their First Amendment and their free speech rights. And, you know, the First Amendment isn't just about free speech. It's also about seeking redress from your government, being able to peacefully gather. We're doing all of those things in the name of marijuana. And part of smoke down prohibition has always been what we call the moment of cannabis reflection at 4:20 p.m. And we've also done it in solidarity with Denver, so 6:20 p.m. our time, in solidarity with a legal marijuana state. But, you know, people light marijuana up, and originally there just was no response at all. I mean, from December of 2012, I did this once with another activist named Colleen Bagley in October of last year. And we did it for the Daily News, and we were on the cover of the Daily News in this action. But it was just the two of us commemorating the arrest of Samuel Caldwell 75 years ago. And I thought it was important that somebody be out there at that time. And some other activists like Kevin Clow from Philly Normal joined me out there that day and observed the protest. And that first sort of small action was sort of how it grew, the modern stuff grew. And a great crew, N.A. Poe, and the guys and girls and the awesome folks involved with the Panic Hour, a comedy activism crew, folks I've known from Occupy Philadelphia, actually, and who really stepped up in a lot of ways and put their activism and comedy and energy into this protest. it really grew it. On 420, there were almost 500 people out there, Russ, at 4:20 p.m. There were no citations, there was no police action, and at 4:20 p.m., a giant cloud of marijuana smoke went up here, and it really was a really wonderful day. Unfortunately, after that, there's a Christian broadcaster here in town who caught the 4:20 protest, and it was widely shared on Christian news. And it sort of got to some politicians who, I guess, called up the Department of Homeland Security and some other agencies. So in May and June and July and even just this weekend, what we've experienced now is a coordinated police action by federal and local authorities against this peaceful protest. And essentially what we're doing is we're going out there and saying that individual Americans are going to go out and light a joint. And, you know, it's making national news that Eric Holder and the Department of Justice have been issuing these memos saying, and one of the clear things about the Department of Justice memos that is almost one of the few clear things in these vague statements is that they're not supposed to use resources to target individual marijuana users.
Right.
So here we have a bunch of Americans, individuals, declaring their ability and rights to go out to Fifth and Market at the First Amendment and use marijuana, and what they get is a very expensive and coordinated militarized police action against them.
We've got
and
a picture
at this point
here
now. It's been all tough. I'm sorry. I want to cut. If you have a question there, go ahead.
I was just going to say we have a picture from one of these actions. This is the one that accompanied your press release. It's a picture of you there, smartly dressed and smoking a joint. And then is that a federal park ranger or park officer? What branch is that that's accosting you there?
I'm not being accosted, actually. You know, what's funny in a way is that, I mean, I have a certain relationship, I guess, with the Rangers and police here in a way. I mean, part of it is that I've been out protesting here in Philadelphia for many years for many issues, Russ. And certainly, you know, I, as a Quaker and a peaceful protester, I've always maintained a certain demeanor. I'm willing to participate in a civil disobedience action, and I've been civil in how I perform, you know, in the course of my detainment and citation. And I've been, you know, civilly handled by park rangers up until now. However, I have seen a lot of people around me, and so that's a park ranger. And what you're seeing is a picture of my second citation, which has now landed me in federal court. But my first citation was a simple fine. We're on national park property, so we fall under the rules that govern every national park in the country. And possession of a controlled substance, of a small amount, is usually a $175 fine,
okay,
which is what I got last time, and I paid it. It's a civil disobedience action.
And by the way, Chris, I always like to bring that point up to remind our friends in the now 20 medical marijuana states that you're not safe at a federal park, Yosemite or Crater Lake or, you know, any of these parks where, you know, especially out west, you know, these people think that they're perfectly fine. And then park ranger tells them otherwise.
Yeah. And I have to say, I mean, you know, on one hand, you know, I think park rangers and all police can issue a lot of discretion in the course of their interaction with cannabis consumers. And, you know, I often, you know, one of the reasons we have a racial bias to arrest is that, you know, white cannabis consumers on the East Coast will often tell you of a police officer letting them off for a joint, and black cannabis consumers will tell you about a trip to jail for a joint.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of discretion at play here. And hopefully, you know, with greater awareness, individual officers might use some of that discretion, but oftentimes they're not going to. They're going to follow the letter of the law. You're absolutely right, Russ. But again, I mean, the strange part about all this for me has been they did show a lot of tolerance of this protest early on. I mean, that can't, you know, be taken out of account, is that for months and months we had hundreds of people out there smoking marijuana, and the park rangers said, I guess, for lack of resources, they didn't incur on the action. But also I sensed, a certain tolerance. We were peaceful in how we demonstrated there. We always cleaned up the site. We were never there for more than an hour. And we simply came out and gave speeches and held a rally and left, and always left the site cleaner than we found it. So I thought we had built up a good relationship, and that's why also it was so confusing to us. Now, you know, there was another factor in all this, Russ, that can't be left out, which
yes,
is an individual named Adam Kokesh, who, you know, along with comedian N.A. Poe in the May action, the first time federal authorities really came in. I mean, Russ, they came in force. I've been in a lot of protests, and I was at Occupy Philadelphia, and certainly the the kind of police action we've had for the, a couple of hundred protesters out here is way disproportionate. I mean, we're talking about over 100, different agencies, and they didn't come out, ready for a protest with, zip ties on their belts. They came out with guns and metal handcuffs, and they took people to the ground and tackled them. And some of them didn't even have marijuana. I mean, some of them had video cameras. Some of them had microphones. So, for all the controversial things that Adam Kokesh is known for and that he did, which was eventually related to gun rights, and he's sitting in a federal detention center in Virginia right now for a very controversial action he did that went way beyond the law down there, I guess. But, for all that, Adam had come out to the smoke down prohibition protest in Philadelphia. And we got some sense, and actually one of the police officers said sort of offhandedly that part of the police action we have garnered was because of Adam and because of his gun rights stuff and I don't know what else. But there was a big change, Russ. I mean, from December until April, there were no citations, no arrests. The Rangers kept a distance. They smiled and waved. And there was a very good atmosphere there. And I think that the spirit of the First Amendment was really alive. But I'll tell you, for whatever reason, the federal authorities have coordinated their action against us at this point. And now in August, I mean, it's just ridiculous. Adam is in a federal detention center, so if they're worried about him, he's not around. And as far as the rest of us go, I mean, we've been around protesting for years. There's no reason to take this action against us. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I'm willing to, stand up for this here with my friends and with a lot of other courageous people, medical marijuana patients, other activists. A lot of people have been involved. Last month, Neil Franklin from LEAP came out and gave a great talk. And, we really have had a broad amount of activists involved with this. So I think it really speaks to the issue of marijuana reform. I think it's one of the greatest protests I've had the privilege to sort of be involved with. And we'll keep it up. But personally, I guess it got a little more serious for me and Libertarian candidate for Senate in New Jersey, Don DeZarn, a really good guy. Don has come out and spoke at a number of the smoke down prohibition protests, and he's been cited twice as well. Now, the U.S. attorney is actually out there. I mean, this is when they come out to this protest now, they set up a little tent, and they put the U.S. attorney under it, and the U.S. attorney, the park rangers, and Department of Homeland Security, and Philadelphia police, except the police, which are the local transit cops, they all come out, and the U.S. attorney is there. So when I got processed, I got taken over to a tent, and my identification was taken, they wrote me out a citation. Now, unlike last time, this time they didn't write in a fine. After consulting with the U.S. attorney that this is my second citation at the site, they're requiring me and Don DeZarn to appear in federal magistrate court. So Don and I will now be, I guess, one of the very few people who go to federal court for simple marijuana possession in the United States. And while it is, it seems strange, but the penalties, I guess, at this point for us are 6 months of incarceration and a $1,000 fine. So whether a judge feels that that Don and I committing this civil disobedience action would net the maximum penalty here, I have some faith in the justice system and a judge not to do that to us. However, that is the potential there. And I'm willing to pay the $175 fine, Russ. If they come back and they say, okay, well, you guys can pay the fine, I would pay it and just, keep paying the fines for the citations if that's how they want to treat it. But if they intend to seek any penalty greater than that, I think that we're going to have to fight it in court.
Yeah. Yeah, and I imagine you've got all sorts of attorney friends who would be at your side for something like that.
Russ, I'm really lucky in that, I really, I'm a writer and a broadcaster, and, I do a lot of activism work, and I do a lot of behind-the-scenes political work when I can, and, it just is a lot of phone work and emails and things like that. So these protest actions that I've been taking place in this year are kind of new territory for me in that regard. I'm used to doing press conferences, not necessarily smoking marijuana in public or doing this. But again, I've been protesting for a long time, and marijuana is an issue that has been my main issue for a long time. And it's the most important social justice issue in America. So, you know, if I'm going to have to go to court, doing it for smoking a joint in front of the Liberty Bell, I think is a privilege rather than something to be terribly concerned about.
All right. Well, we support you in your activism, and it's very brave of you to be going before the court and everything like this. And, folks, you can find Chris Goldstein at freedomisgreen.com and phillynormal.org. And is there any sort of court support or legal fund or anything people need to know about?
Well, I'm about to find out. You know, later this week, I am consulting with a number of attorneys. And, you know, like I said, you know, I'm lucky enough that this is the only time, Russ, in my years of activism and being a consumer that I've ever been cited or arrested or anything for marijuana related. So, strangely enough, in a way, but, you know, it could have serious consequences for me. So I am consulting with attorneys, and we'll figure out if I need to mount a legal defense fund. I also want to make sure that Don Desarn, you know, has the same kind of defense. I know he wants to defend himself in the same way. And, you know, he certainly doesn't want to have any of the maximum consequences be his penalty.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he and I are in this together, and it could be very interesting, Russ.
Yeah.
Frankly, it could be a very interesting legal opportunity. And, you know, I'm kind of looking forward to it.
Yeah, maybe we'll set some sort of precedent there, or we'll see the Justice Department have to react to its own words about, you know, individual consumers of marijuana not being a priority.
I agree with that, too. I mean, the U.S. attorney here in Pennsylvania is an Obama appointee. He's an African-American, you know, prosecutor, spent some time in defense. You know, the idea that the U.S. attorney's office is sort of part of this coordinated action against a simple marijuana protest, I think, is a perfect example of the waste of resources the federal government is willing to spend. I mean, unfortunately, we are demonstrating that. This is security theater here, Russ, and, mm-hmm. and unfortunately, it's a taxpayer's expense.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this is not where our Department of Homeland Security agents need to be, is out, you know, facing down people who want to smoke a joint to protest marijuana prohibition in front of the Liberty Bell. So, you know, I think that, you know, I don't agree with it. I'm certainly going to be civil in all of my interactions with the individual officers involved. But as far as the law and the supervision here and the people who are calling down these resources on us, I think they need to be called out in a way. So taking up the court is unwittingly a way that the government's going to do it to itself. So this should be interesting.
Yeah, and I hope your press release makes it to the offices of Pat Leahy, the senator from Vermont, who's going to be having those hearings with Holder to question him about the drug war. This is definitely something that should come to his attention.
Well, I hope so. I certainly sent it out broadly and widely, and we certainly hope it gets out there. Again, you know, Don and I are there aren't that many people of all the hundreds of thousands, almost a million arrests a year for possession in the United States. Most of them are at the municipal and state level. The federal government gets to sort of pass the buck on that. And again, it's an interesting opportunity because those who do have a marijuana case in the federal court are often facing something much more serious than
sure.
simple possession.
Sure.
So, again, it could be interesting, Russ. And I never thought I would say I would look forward to be taken to court by the U.S. attorney, but almost in a way I am.
Well, we will keep in touch here. And whoops, sorry about that. That was not supposed to fire off at that time. My apologies. How did that happen? Let's go there. Things are crazy in the studio, Chris. Sometimes, you know how it goes. But
it's all good, man. You guys are lucky on the West Coast. It's all good. No.
We will keep
good day out there, and I really appreciate the time. It's really good to hear your voice. It's great to be on the show, and you know, and good luck to you out there. You know, don't forget us about all you marijuana legalizers out there on the West Coast. One of the things I think would really help reform nationally is that, you know, all us East Coasters make it to D.C. You know, it's easy for us to take a 2-hour bus trip or something like that.
We'll be
like
right
that,
back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors.
Out. That's right. We'll see you out at the Boston Freedom Rally as well.
Because their ad money goes straight
take it easy,
to the
man.
Russ Belville Show.
Have a good one, man.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hey, Ellen, want a hit? Want to smoke a joint before trying this on?
There you go, Ellen. You want to get high? We got some great high stick in the back.
Smoke. Kind buds. Sexy.
Love this stuff. It'll get you really high.
activity of a 14-year-old after smoking marijuana. If you use pot, you're not using your brain.
Stupid prohibition story.
As a public service, the Russ Belville Show reminds you that smoking marijuana does not make one stupid. However, some stupid people do smoke marijuana, and prohibition is always waiting for another victim. Learn your lesson from today's stupid prohibition stories.
With your stupid prohibition stories, I'm old-timey 1920s radio reporter Freddie Farrakh. From the New York Daily News, marijuana grower killed and nearly decapitated by booby traps he set himself. An upstate New York marijuana grower accidentally killed himself with the booby trap he'd set up to protect his plants, police said. Daniel Ricketts was almost decapitated Saturday after he drunkenly drove his quad bike into barely visible thin piano wire strung up around his plantation. Hikers spotted his lifeless corpse and called cops. Police also found barbed wire and a leg trap used to catch coyotes surrounding the four large plants. Officers removed the plants from the property and are now continuing their investigation into the tragedy. I'm Freddie Farrakh with your stupid prohibition story!
All right, folks. Let's make this a teachable moment. No marijuana plants are worth anyone's life. Not yours. Not the guy you're trying to catch with the booby traps. Don't do it. Don't booby trap your grow. It's not worth it. You will get busted worse. Cops find the booby traps. It's all sorts of extra charges they'll throw on. Especially if you injure or kill a cop. Not worth it, folks. And this genius had four plants? Four plants, dude. I'm telling you, if you set up piano wire around your four plants, and then you get drunk, get on your quad bike, and nearly hack your head off, that's just Darwin in action. You're just weeding out the gene pool of stupid. All right. Be right back with a short radical rant. Stick around.
This is Brian the Red, and you're listening to 420radio.org. So get a little fiery.
Hey, sit back, relax, and have a puff or two. Cause all we really trying to do is get out.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
All right. Well, you know, I've been covering this issue of drug testing for welfare for quite a long time. It's got a personal kind of issue for me, since as a kid, my family survived thanks to welfare payments, WIC, food stamps and such. So I always have a personal issue when people go after the people who are getting by on those benefits. And I don't want to go into the whole thing of that right now. I just want to get to the meat of this story, which is, regardless of what you think about people on welfare, whether or not they should be using marijuana or other drugs, trying to stop them from doing so costs more than the welfare itself. There's been this Republican-led effort to pass bills throughout the state legislatures to require drug testing for certain public assistance programs, things like mostly temporary assistance for needy families, you know, formerly known as welfare, but also SNAP, which is formerly known as food stamps, and in some states, unemployment, which is an insurance program we workers pay into in case we're unemployed. But anyway, this effort to pass these bills have led to three states now that we're going to talk about spending over $200,000 of taxpayer money to catch 203 people, 203 violators since 2011. On average, the states then are spending about $1,000 per poor person they catch to deny them what is a median benefit of about $428. Now, we start in Florida, where the law to drug test citizens that were applying for TANF took effect in July of 2011. That program functioned for 4 months before a federal judge found it was unconstitutional. Problem was, is they were drug testing everybody who applied for the benefits, right? And they ended up spending $118,000 reimbursing the people who passed the test because they had to pay for the test out of their first check, right? It's like $30 a test or so. And the people that passed, they got that reimbursed. So the state of Florida spent $118,000 reimbursing people. Out of 4,086 people they tested, they caught 108 of them. 108 people, that's a rate of 2.6%, which about matches the rate of people who aren't poor. So it actually ended up costing them $45,000 more in reimbursements than they would have spent in the TANF payments to the 108 people who they denied. Now, Florida's law was halted because it's unconstitutional. They found that if you ask everyone to pee in a cup just because they're poor, just because they're applying for benefits, that's unreasonable search and seizure. So the next few states decided to get around that. Utah and Oklahoma, who we're going to look at next, passed these laws that required poor people to submit to a written test that would ferret out which one of them are possibly drug users. Okay, this is an assay, kind of a psychological screening test, right? Do you know what 420 means? Yes. You know, maybe they're a pot smoker. No, I don't know what that's on the test. But anyway, they gave this screening test, and then if you fail the screening test, there's the probable cause they need to do the pee test. Well, now we're getting the results. The Deseret News in Utah reports that the state spent almost $6,000 on the written tests for everyone and then spent over $20,000 on the drug tests they gave to the few people who failed the written test. And they caught 12 people. That's right. 12 people, $26,000 spent to catch 12 people. And in Oklahoma, the Oklahoman newspaper reports that the written test they spent $37,000 on, and then follow-up screenings after the written test cost $34,000, and then the drug test for the people who failed the screenings cost $10,000. Altogether, it was over $82,000, and they caught 83 people. Now, the defenders of these drug tests, like the Oklahoma State Senator David Holt, who wrote this damn bill, will refuse to acknowledge that these programs cost more money than they save in the withheld benefits. He says, quote, "Well, you never know how many people just don't apply because they know they're going to be tested." But in Florida, we do know. In the 4 months that they had their drug testing program that was found unconstitutional, where everyone was drug tested, not just having to pass a written test, everyone was drug tested, the number of people who applied for TANF benefits stayed the same. Nobody was scared away by the drug test. So you didn't save any money on the imaginary people who didn't take the test. Now, I called the Departments of Human Services in Utah and Oklahoma to try to find out, has their TANF workload gone up or gone down? But the data from 2013 isn't quite available yet. But let me tell you, folks, when it is, I'll tell you all about it, because you know me, I look shit up. That's all the time we got for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Radical Russ. Till next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
Please, if you can, donate to the Jenny Kush Memorial Fund via WePay. Our address is rad-r.us/JennyKush. We'll keep the banner up all day long. And they'll see you.